Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up with your hosts, Luke.
And Kyle.
Hi, Kyle.
Hey, Luke.
Nice cap you're wearing today.
Well, you made me self-conscious about my hair.
Well, the good news is that this is audio only, and I didn't mean to make you feel self-conscious about your hair, but it was just a bit floppy yesterday. I'd never seen it that way before.
Yeah.
Talking about things that fuck you up, that really fucked with my day. So, you know. No, I'm just kidding. It didn't really. Well, today's episode, we're joined by Ben. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. Hey, thanks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Ben, where are you calling from?
I am from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Ooh, okay. Good. Another place that I don't know of and have never been to. So that's good.
Hey, there you go.
Well, Ben, thanks for coming on. We obviously did a bit of correspondence before hopping on here and talking about kind of traumatic, life-changing events, be it a one-off experience, a series of events. Where would you like to begin, and where does your story start?
My story starts, I would say, probably in 2006. I moved out from Grand Rapids, Michigan to the other side of the country to a little itty-bitty town called Elmira, Oregon, outside of Eugene, Oregon. And there I started my career, something that I had gone to college for, and I almost blush a little bit to even admit it or acknowledge it. We can get into that later. Okay. But I moved out there to be a youth pastor.
Okay.
And so one of the first students that I met, his name was Luke, and Luke and I connected when he started riding his BMX bike through my yard.
Sounds like me.
He didn't ask permission, but I didn't care.
That's what I used to do. Maybe it was, I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah, and as we discussed on our email, you know, obviously my name's Luke, and I was a BMX rider, and my traumatic experience was all about BMX riding, and you continue.
Perfect. It's just crazy, the little synchronies that are present. So I'm just going to roll a whole bunch of events into a very short statement, but moving out west really fucked me up in a lot of ways. That student, Luke, that I got to know, formed a mentoring relationship. I had a pretty active role in his life, got to know his parents. They came to see me as a resource. There was this super awesome dynamic where Luke had a place at our house, and I had a place at their table. Like, it was just this camaraderie that existed between us. And Luke would often ride over for dinners and things like that, and obviously was a part of the programs that I was putting on at the church. So just a solid connection. And it all started because he was riding his bike through my yard. And at first he thought I was mad, but I was just wanting to get to know this young fellow that's bold enough to ride through the youth pastor's yard.
That's funny.
So, fast forward a number of years, Luke and I start to grow distant. There was just some ambivalence, you know, just we had kind of lost touch. And about a year or so after that, I had moved north to Portland, took a different job at a different church. And soon after starting there, I got a frantic phone call from Luke's best friend, and he's like, "Dude, Ben, I don't know how else to say this other than Luke's dead."
Oh,
and I was
shit.
Like, "You're kidding me." He's like, "No." And Luke and Cody would always pull shenanigans. So I was, in this place of kind of laughing, like, "No way. It can't be." But Cody was persistent, and he's like, "No, dude, he's dead. He was in a BMX accident and hit his head. He's gone."
I mean,
and so I had no chance to make things right with Luke. Mm-hmm. Our relationship just kind of fizzled out. It went from something super strong and meaningful for both of us to just kind of blah.
Did you feel, how old were you when you met him, and how old was he? And then how old were you when you got this news, and how old was he when he died?
Yeah, so he was, in sixth or seventh grade, and I was relatively young. I mean, I went out right after college, so I was in my early 20s, probably 22.
Yeah.
And got to know Luke all the way through middle school and into high school. Mm. And so it was a pretty significant amount of time that had gone by. He was old enough to drop out of high school, which he did choose to do in pursuit of his BMX. Mm. And he had actually gotten into an accident and knocked out all the front teeth. So his BMX name, street name, whatever, was Ruthless Toothless. So I saw that happening, from social media and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I actually helped him set up a MySpace page back in the day for his BMX stuff.
Wow, MySpace.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a pretty good chunk of time that we had gotten to know each other. I was relatively young, fresh out of college, first job. He was a, sixth, seventh grade kid. And he passed away when he was probably in his junior year.
Oh, that's rough. And did you, it sounds like you kind of mentored him, but saw him as like a friend, but also like a younger brother, or like a, like a son as well, like all of those things, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Did they go into any detail on like how it happened, or is it just sort of one of those freak things that just.
Yeah, there was a lot of debate whether or not he was wearing his helmet, but he went over a, I don't know the technical term, so I'll just call it a big jump, went really high, had a ton of air, and somehow couldn't stick the landing and ended up landing on his head.
Jesus Christ.
So he was gone in seconds.
It is odd, It's so brings back memories for me. And it's weird that you're using, the name Luke and talking about BMX accident, which was exactly how my friend died. And he died on a BMX and he hit his head. And it is kind of weird, kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Not creepy. That's a terrible thing to say. But you know what I mean? It's a bit like, it's mad that all these events are going on around the world at kind of similar times. And it's like sliding doors, isn't it, really?
Right.
And I know this is just the beginning of your story because, talking about things especially with kids and fostering is what we're going to go on to, but. Oh, it fascinates me. Like when we hear these guests with these such personal stories, and when we're going through it, and when our listeners are going through all these traumas, other people are going through these traumas, and this thing that you think is, I don't know, it's not reassuring to know that other people are going through all these things, but it is reassuring to people when they listen to these episodes and they've gone through similar things to hear how people have got through them. And, all the shit that we've been through in our lives and how we've come through it all. It's fucking nuts.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
So was there, as a youth pastor, was there any, questioning of God's plan? Or were you kind of like...
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, Kyle.
Yeah, there sure as hell was. there's an earlier part of my story that I... I don't like to talk about a ton, so I'm not going to get into a huge amount of detail, but so here I am. I've followed this path that these influential people in my life have kind of set before me. I've walked this trajectory. I've bonded with this kid. Like, I thought I was having this successful thing out of college, and then the wheels just start falling off. I mean, Luke's death was it was the tip of the iceberg. I mean, things just kind of spiraled out from there. So, yeah, I definitely question God's plan. I certainly threw my fist in the air and just like, what the hell? Yeah. What is going on?
When you experience death of a child or the death of someone so young that you're so close to, that's a tough one to take.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially with the distance that was between us. And I look at it from the perspective of, if that God card wasn't there, would that distance have been there?
Yeah, that's really rough. So what happens next?
So I immediately, not quite immediately, but I called his family as soon as I heard the news. And I just said, I'm so sorry. What can I do? We got together and essentially talked through the funeral. I put a slideshow together, which was just, that was heavy. Just going through all of the photos and putting them into a slideshow to his favorite music. And that really fucked me up. that was really hard. And as I'm doing that, my wife was in their home, and she's like, what can I do to help? What do you need? And the mom was just like, honestly, we're running out of clothes because we just haven't had the energy to do laundry. And my wife is like, all right, I'm gonna sit here and take care of your laundry. Ben's gonna do the slideshow and work on the funeral, and we're gonna, this is what we're gonna do. So
that's nice.
So yeah, it was a very rough experience, but we made the best out of it. And to this day, I'm in touch with his family.
That's nice.
So, yeah. And then funeral's done. I return to Portland and try to pull myself together. But it seems like as soon as I felt I was, you know, better or getting into a better headspace, we learned that the children that we had been fostering during this whole span of time, we were told by the caseworkers and several other decision makers that these kids, there were three of them, we were told that we were in the clear to adopt them. It was to the point where caseworkers were telling us that we could start calling them by different names that we had chosen for them. And so, yeah, it was like in our minds, it was a for sure thing. Like, this is going to happen. So then we get this devastating phone call, series of phone calls and emails where it is made known that the biological parents of the children are choosing to appeal the termination of their parental rights. And then we heard that the Oregon Supreme Court was going to hear the appeal, which is very uncommon. I mean, people try all the time to do this, and so we were just kind of fingers crossed. This is just kind of a blip on the radar. Everything's going to be okay. But it wasn't okay.
Oh, no.
And the Supreme Court of Oregon decided to hear the case. And not only did they hear the case, but they overturned the termination of the parental rights. And that opened the door for the kids to start transitioning back to their biological parents.
Oh, dear. So just taking a couple of steps back and just to unpick this a bit for those that don't understand the process, and me included. When you guys were fostering the kids, firstly, how old were the three children and how long were you fostering them for? And just briefly explain what the difference is between fostering and adopting.
Yeah. So the kids, when they came to us, let's see, there were, the youngest was 9 months and the oldest was 5.
Oh, wow.
And the middle was, I think, 3, 4. Wow. So young.
Yeah.
I mean, formative years. And so, especially with the 9 month old, she knew us as mom and dad. So,
and were they siblings?
Yes.
Yep. And they'd all been given up, or had they been removed from their parents at that stage?
They had been removed, so they were in the foster care system. Mm. But the caseworker essentially worked the case, and there's a lot of stuff that happened that probably shouldn't have. And now that we are older and wiser and looking back on it, we've come to a point where we can acknowledge that it's probably best for the kids to be with their biological parents. Mm. However, the caseworker really pushed for the termination of the parental rights and pushed hard enough that she got it to the court level. And it really was one person who kind of spearheaded this whole effort. The biological parents actually started a website documenting what they thought was the unfair treatment they were receiving by the department. So it was a very vocal set of parents.
I was going to ask, like, just because they get their parental rights reestablished, it doesn't mean that they're like great, loving, kind parents, right? It just means.
Yeah, exactly. It means that the court has determined that they at least have enough ducks in the row to care for children and they're not a threat to their ongoing safety and well-being. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, saintly or anything.
It is so heavy. So they ended up going back.
They did. This was all kind of taking place right before everything came to a head in like October, November, kind of this time of year. And when it became clear that we just didn't stand a fighting chance to keep these kids, we told the caseworkers and everybody else involved, we were like, you know, if adopting them is off the table, then it's not healthy for us to continue down this road with no guarantee of anything, without a timeline. So we just, I guess you could say we put in our 2-week notice, except right. It wasn't really 2 weeks, but we told our caseworkers we're done.
You said, can you describe like how you felt when you said goodbye?
It was devastating. So the caseworkers asked us to keep them until Christmas, to keep them through Christmas, just to give them a positive holiday experience. And that was about a month. So
that is heartbreaking.
We did it. Somehow we rallied, and to this day, I'm not exactly quite sure, other than to say there was definitely some supernatural power that we were relying on. But
And so how long had you had them all in total?
Close to 3 years.
It's really devastating, isn't it? And
yeah,
and it another was question, and please don't take this as a judgment, because it isn't. But when you foster kids, is this is going to sound awful? So I don't mean it to.
Just say it.
Is it often on a short term basis fostering, or are you sort of 90% chance it's up to you and you can keep the children if all things go well, like?
Yeah, that's a good question. Every case is different.
Mm.
We also adopted our son through foster care in Oregon as well, but completely different circumstances. With his, we knew kind of from the beginning that it was going to move in that direction of adoption as being the long-term goal.
Mm.
It's really case by case. And so with the sibling group of three, They had been removed several times. So there were a lot of extenuating circumstances that were making it clear to us that they needed a long-term placement, and we agreed we wanted to be that for them. And so when we entered into it, we had the mentality that this was going to be a long-term thing, and that's what we had geared ourselves up for. Now, there are foster parents who are just foster parents. They're not committed to, you know, a long-term arrangement. They're just they're foster parents. Yeah. So if a kid is removed, parents need to work through some shit in order to get them back. They'll go and stay with the foster parent for a short-term, kind of an open-ended plan.
We also, and not to, we did have a young lady on who had been through the foster care system, and she had been in 20 different foster homes by the time she was 18. She admits to being terribly behaved a lot of the time, you know, in hindsight when she looks back. But she did also flag that there are a lot of kind of jobbing foster parents that are sort of there to make the money out of it, you know, the sort of claim the welfare or claim the... and she said a couple of the houses that she stayed in, they made her pay for her own soap and toothpaste and toothbrushes and stuff like that. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, man. That is wild.
Isn't that wild? Where there's
so just collecting a check and making her pay for...
Correct.
That's horrible.
Isn't that terrifying? And it doesn't seem fair life sometimes. Firstly, that she had to go through that shit, but then you guys having to go through just that false hope, right? That they're sort of saying, looks like you guys are done it. You're in the clear. You got these three kids and it's just a formality now that's going to go through for you guys. And then having
that
rug taken from under your feet.
Yeah, it was awful.
That is rough.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that. So what's next? And also, you've still got the memory of Luke, haven't you? And I guess there's kind of some, not rejection, but there's some sort of abandonment and there's some sort of like loss involved there. And did that stir some of that stuff up as well?
It absolutely did, yeah. Mm. It stirred a lot of that up. Because there was so much that was unresolved. Yeah. And now with these kids, like, they're still alive. Mm. And I hope they're doing well. But it's that same sort of unresolved tension of these kids were in my life. I was dad. It, for the longest time, it was so hard to even go through pictures. Mm. Just because it brought so much to the surface. And, yeah, so there was so much crossover there.
Yeah.
It was just a devastating span of time.
Yeah.
But the shit didn't stop rolling there either.
Okay. Come on then. Hit us.
So, So probably 6 months after the kids leave. No, it was 5 months. 5 months after we go through that treacherous time of, faking it till we make it through the Christmas season, trying to give these kids a good Christmas, and then driving them down to their next foster placement in Eugene. Again, we were asked to do that because we were seen as the kids trusted us.
Yeah.
So we really stuck it out to the bitter end and drove them down to Eugene and got them settled in there. New placement, and then went back up and took a weekend to heal. But then fast forward about 5 months, and over that span of time, my job is really not going well. I had a very unique way of doing youth ministry. Like, I'm not your typical, like... when a lot of people think of youth group, they think of like a big production, like there's lights, there's loud music, there's like this big event and crazy games and all this stuff. That's just not my style. It never has been. I value relationships and building into kids and mentoring. And honestly, all of the stuff that I had done with Luke, that's the kind of stuff that I jive with and really enjoy. but I'm in a church where my boss has a completely different philosophy of what youth group should look like and how I should be spending my time and the kind of things I should be teaching. And I'm standing my ground because I really believe in what I'm doing, and I'm seeing results and, you know, effective things happening in the youth group. But the senior pastor is on a completely different end of the spectrum. And not only is he there, but he's pulled with him some very influential people in the church. And so it's like this divide. It really was a divide. There were people on Team Ben and people on Team Senior Pastor, and it was a war. It really got just ugly.
And it's so crazy because you think of, like, you know, people who work in the church, it's definitely a calling. And then it's like, I mean, I guess they're people, so.
Yeah, it's messy. And so in the church that I was at, the primary decision makers, they were called the Board of Overseers. And And they would meet once a month, and usually I'm invited to these meetings, but the meeting in May, I was told not to attend. And the day before that meeting, I sat down with the senior pastor, who was my boss, and a couple of the overseers, and we had a conversation, and we essentially said that, you know, we want to work this out. We want to make this work. They acknowledged the success I was having with the youth, and the senior pastor said, you know what, I think we're going to stick with this. We're going to make this work. And the next day at the meeting I wasn't invited to, he kind of did an about face. And the Board of Overseers essentially let go of their responsibility and just said, you know, whatever you want to do, senior pastor, we'll support you.
Wow.
So they just kind of rubber stamped what the senior pastor wanted.
Wow.
I got a call at 10 o'clock in the evening from the chairman of the board. And he's like, Ben, I need you to come to the church office at 10 o'clock at night. And I knew what it was. There was no doubt in my mind. So I showed up, entered the building, went to the office, and sat down. And there was a moment of trying to figure out who was going to say the bad news.
Wow.
Finally, the senior pastor speaks up and he says, Ben, we've decided that we're asking for your resignation.
Oh my gosh.
God, that pisses me off so much.
So, yeah.
These dudes, like, and I'm broad stroking it here, but the guys that are always like the most holy, quote unquote, they just do the shadiest shit.
Yeah.
And it's like yeah, let's work it out. And then fuck this guy. And then.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That guy. Sorry.
No, I'm with you.
I got some personal issues.
I'm liking your passion, Kyle. This is great.
So that happened. And generally, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. It takes a lot to get me ruffled up. But I was at the point where I didn't have any reserve left in me. And I just looked him square in the eye and I said, well, you know what? There's really nothing more to say, is there?
Mm.
And I just stood up and I walked out.
Yes.
Go I would back. Have said some things, but.
Gosh. So Kyle, that's why you're wearing your hat today. It's got a B on it. It's B for Ben. Go Ben.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you turned your back on that job. You didn't turn your back on it. They asked you to resign. Was that the beginning of you turning your back on the church?
From a vocational standpoint, yes.
Mm.
After that happened, I swore that I would never, ever take a paycheck from the church again.
Because there's a difference than believing in God and in the teachings and actually believing in the church.
Right. Opinion. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Mm.
Well, I sent out, I think, close to 200 applications for any job I could think of that would be a remotely a possible good fit.
Yeah.
Did not apply for any ministry jobs. I was done and over. 6 months go by and nothing's come to fruition. I had so many interviews and near wins, like interviews that would go so well.
That's scary. That's like,
and it was incredibly scary.
And the pastoring was the only job you'd ever done.
Yeah. God. So, and this is in Oregon, which you guys, I know, Luke, you're on the West Coast. It's not the Bible Belt of the Midwest. Like, it's hard for people to understand what does a youth pastor do all day, and right. what skills does he have that are going to transfer yeah. over. Yeah, it was a major struggle. And I had actually started schooling, grad school. I decided I don't have a job, so might as well go to grad school. So I did a semester towards a degree in counseling. Mm. And during that process, I just realized that I was a mess. Like, I had left some things with family unresolved when I moved out west to Oregon. That put a strain on family relationships. Mm. And then the season of loss that we walked through, three huge losses back to back. I'm in these counseling classes kind of feeling like, I wouldn't say a fraud because my heart was definitely in the right place, but my heart was broken. Mm. And I just realized that there's no way in hell that I can be a counselor or a therapist when I've got this significant load that I haven't really dealt with.
Wow.
You're better than most counselors and therapists because they're some of the most messed up people I've met.
It's true. Yeah.
This is the episode where Kyle is going to take everyone down.
Awesome.
Yeah. He's actually just working on himself. Like, most people are like, no, I'm fine. And then,
but Ben, you raise a good point, and I think that's a really astute comment as well. Like, I see what you're saying about that fraud. It's like, how can I be that person that is giving advice and helping people if I haven't figured it out myself? If I've got all this unresolved issues and traumas myself, you got to figure that out.
Yeah. So ultimately I did finish that semester and then unenrolled, and we're running out of money very quickly. I took a course in insurance in order to get my license, but by the time I finished that course, we had plumb run out of money, and it's like, nothing's working. So we ended up moving back to the Midwest, crash landed in my parents' basement for 9 months, and just kind of got back on our feet.
You have a son. So out of the fostering, one son remained, and that turned into an adoption.
It did. Yep. Great. So he is my pride and joy. I love him.
That's lovely.
We've been through it together.
That's lovely.
And it sounds like, you know, your family, obviously your parents and your wife, were very supportive during this time, right?
Absolutely. When the wheels come off and life gets fucked up, the people closest to you, they're either as close can be, or they just run away because they can't handle it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the people in my life, we were like glue. We were just stuck with each other.
That's really lucky.
Those times really just bonded us together.
So when you landed in your in the basement, how old was your son at that stage?
Oh, let's see. First grade.
Oh, wow.
Second grade. So early elementary.
Young.
Yep.
Like six, seven, 8 years old.
You didn't really knew what was going on. He was just like, awesome, I get to spend time with grandma and grandpa, or just like,
yeah. I mean, he rode in the moving truck with me and through the mountains and everything else, and to him it was a big adventure. So this was 2012 2013, so getting close to 10 years out from there. My son is now a sophomore in high school. believe it or not, but my wife and I decided that we're still in this. We really believe in the foster care and adoption, and we believe that it's our calling in life. So we actually adopted again.
Wow! Congratulations.
So yeah.
And how did the work situation pan out for you?
There was a copy machine dealership that took a chance on me. What? And so I got my start selling office equipment and copy machines and really found my niche with that. Very successful. I had a lot of experience, obviously, with the church world and the nonprofit world.
Wow.
That's huge in the Midwest. Every church needs a copier. Every nonprofit needs a copier. So
I have a quick question. And this is going back a little bit, but like, what was your relationship with God throughout all of this? Were you just like, fuck him? Or were you like, all right, what's your plan?
Good question.
Like, maybe both? Like,
all of the above. I mean, it. If you look at the book of Psalms, David is all over the place when he writes. Like, sometimes he's just like exuberant and over the moon happy and like, God is amazing. And then he has these moments of despair where he's like, why did you even create us? Like, what's going on? So during that span, it was a roller coaster. My faith really was very up and down. And
but they say like David was God's favorite. So,
right. Yeah.
I mean, that's the honesty part of it.
I think so. So yeah. And then out of all of this, I also started doing Uber and Lyft driving just to make ends meet when I was early in my sales career. And I met my bestie, my best friend Jason, and got to know him. And we actually ended up doing what you guys are doing. We started our own podcast, and it's all about mental health and faith and uncomfortable conversations.
We're ready to come on the show. Just let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be amazing.
It was either going to be that or it was going to be about copy machines, your podcast. I didn't know which one it was going to be about.
Or so. Things you wanted to say to church elders.
Right. Yeah. No kidding.
So conscious of the time, and what I mean, just wrapping up your story, which is, when we think about, you know, our guests and some of the stuff that they've been through, I know I said this at the beginning, but just like the roller coaster, and also like coming from a place of like loss and grief and abandonment, and how do you feel now? Like, how do you feel in the grand scheme of things? Has the trauma made you stronger? Have you know, what are your learnings? Like, I know that's a bit of a broad, deep question, but
that's a great question. The first word that comes to mind is I am strong. Yeah. And I can be strong for others. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest gift in all of this. It fucks me up and I'm still dealing with that. And in some ways I'll be dealing with the fallout for the rest of my life. It's just, that's trauma.
Yeah.
But because I've been through this trauma, it has made me stronger. A word that my therapist always used was contain. And in the context of, because of what I've been through, I can contain the experience of others and hear them out and listen and genuinely be available to them. Like, I have space and understanding.
Yeah.
I get it. I've been there.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm strong and I'm available because of everything that I went through.
That is fucking brilliant. That is. It's such a great ending, because we were talking to a very spiritual lady on an episode we were recording yesterday. And she was saying that she can read people who have been through stuff and who have experienced the loss or the trauma, and they have come through it, and the strength that they've needed to come through it. Just not only that you're strong, but I love that you're available, and you're available to pass on that information or to help people. Because there's something reassuring about someone who's been through some fucking shit Because when they say, I know how you feel, or it gets better, or try doing this, if it comes from a place of experience, it helps people. It just helps people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kyle, anything else before we wrap up this episode?
I don't know, man. I was trying not to get emotional. I was like just picturing of how like driving away from those kids that you lived with for 3 years and your heart being ripped out. Like, fuck, man. Like that's, I don't know how you did it.
I don't know either. It's just when you go through shit like that, it's all you can do is move forward. And
just the way you described that last Christmas with them as well, it's like, I mean, that is, I can feel that in my chest, that feeling.
It's like, just reminds me of like, there's like really two types of pain, like pain that hurts, you know, if someone breaks up with you, like pain that alters, where it's like, you know, I don't know how you're ever going to be the same person you were before.
Yeah. But congratulations on like your continuing journey. And that's one thing we say on this podcast. It's not about like, you did it, you got there, you made it, but you are in the ascension, like the darkness is behind you, and like having survived that and all of those events, those life-changing experiences, from like the rejection of the job to the friend, you know, which is heartbreaking, and then the kids, blah. But knowing now you have your two adopted children, and you have your job, and you have your wife, and you have you and your knowledge to give.
Yes. And what's crazy to me, and sometimes I wonder if I have some victim mentality or Stockholm syndrome, but I've somehow chosen to maintain my faith in God and continue to engage in that and be involved in my church. And yeah, I've got some pretty huge boundaries and walls to protect myself and my family, but I'm finding myself able to engage in that again. And that is beautiful to me.
And I don't think that's weird.
No, I mean, and I think that's quite common too. And I think that you can't blame, if you have faith, then blaming God on things that go wrong is probably not, you know, that's not necessarily what you should be doing.
Right. So I did find a Facebook post. He was born in 93 and passed away October 17, 2010.
Wow. Gosh, that's really heavy, isn't it?
Oh, I was just remembering what I was doing in 2010. It's just, you know, whenever someone says like, oh, this person passed, you know, you kind of look back and like, what was I doing in 2010? And it's like, it's just like a testament. Like I was so like in a different headspace, and here you are dealing with the loss of like this close friend.
That's what I'm saying about the sliding doors. It's fascinating that we get to meet on this platform here.
Right.
Well, Ben, thank you so much. This has been a fantastic story. We'll stay in touch. Absolutely. When your episode goes live, we'll make sure there's some notes and people can find you, and we'll tag you. And
Is it okay to promote my own podcast?
Yes, please. Yes. Let's have your plug. Let's do it.
All right. Yeah. So Threads Podcast, Life Unfiltered. Threads, like a ball of thread. Mm-hmm. We are all about the threads that tie us together in life. We live in a culture that is so hell-bent on division and instead of focusing on what unites us, so often we're focused on what divides us and the labels and everything else. So on the Threads Podcast, we are unfiltered. We look for those connecting points between us. We look for, you know, the things to celebrate and the things to grieve and everything in between. Yeah. And you can find us at threadspodcast.com. And we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those platforms.
And we'll make sure there's a link.
Our three topics are faith, mental health, and uncomfortable conversations.
Holy shit. Sounds like pretty much all I talk about all day with anybody. And make them uncomfortable. So that's good. And we'll make sure there's a link to your podcast on the show notes as well as any social media stuff you'd like us to include.
I feel like I stumbled into some just a space with two incredible guys. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been great.
Three incredible guys now, Ben, but thanks. Yeah, here you are. You can add yourself to the list. This has been brilliant. Thanks again. And we appreciate you. And look forward to this episode going live and all our listeners getting to hear your story.
Thank you.